Okay, good evening and welcome everyone to our second virtual finance and facilities meeting. And today is April 16th. I'm going to be doing a roll call. I know that we do have quorum, but I'm just going to go over some of the norms for our virtual meetings. So please note, as you just heard, that our meeting is being recorded and will be posted for the public over the next few days. If I can remind you all to place yourselves on mute until called upon, this really helps with our sound quality and minimizing any feedback. We do have roll call in place for attendance and for questions and any action items that are moved and voted on. When you're called upon for questions, if you have no questions, that's okay, but please state that. I don't want to assume that you don't have a question just because we can't hear you in the event that you've forgotten to unmute yourself. I have a rotating list that I will go through, so I will randomly select committee members to move an action item, and I will run through an alphabetical list that rotates for calling on people for questions and comments. And to facilitate voting, we will do a negative vote, so I will ask if anyone is opposed to an action item, and you only need to speak up if you are opposed. Are there any questions before we get started? Now, this is our second go-around. So I'll start with a roll call. I'll start with committee members. Trustee Buck?
Present.
Trustee Galindo?
Present.
Trustee Johnstone? Trustee Johnstone?
Present.
Thank you. Trustee Putt?
Present.
Are there any non-committee members present? Okay, I didn't receive any notice from other trustees. I'll just go through staff to confirm who we have on the line. We've got Associate Director Zucker.
I'm here.
Senior Manager of Business, Denise Dawson.
I'm here.
Senior Manager of Facilities, Dave Anderson.
Present.
Do we have Communications Officer Mark Taylor?
I'm here.
And we've got our minute taker, Gail McDonald.
Here.
Are there any other staff members present on the call? Okay, and again, I wasn't expecting anyone, but just checking. So again, welcome everyone. Hopefully this meeting will go as smoothly as our last, but if you do have any technical difficulties, I do have my trusty phone handy and you can text me there as well. I will call the meeting to order. It is 5:04. We've done our roll call, so we have quorum and all committee members present. I'm looking for approval of the agenda, and that is going to be moved by Trustee Buck. Are there any questions or comments for the agenda? And again, I will run through the list of trustees, so you can say no if you don't have any questions or comments, or please speak up if you do. Trustee Buck?
No questions.
Thank you. Trustee Galindo?
No questions.
Trustee Johnstone?
No questions.
Trustee Tutt?
No questions.
Is anyone opposed? Okay, so the agenda has been moved and approved. We'll move into item number three, that is our 2020-2021 accommodation strategy schedule. If trustees can bring up the report, we will be looking at pages 3-1 to 3-2, and I will let Associate Director Zucker direct us if there is a PowerPoint to go along with this presentation. I don't believe there is. With that, I will turn this over to Associate Director Zucker.
Thank you. So this item that is on the agenda is an action item. And the reason that we have it, we moved to this strategy last year where we go through the accommodation review strategy schedule and we approve it now in April so that in May when we bring forward the long-term facilities master plan that we are able to include this the accommodation review, the updated accommodation review strategy into that document. So unfortunately, there's not much to report to trustees. We still are in the same position that we were last year where the ministry has not provided us with any updated guidelines. So the moratorium on school closures and accommodation reviews is still in place. So therefore, our accommodation schedule at this time has no accommodation reviews taking place next year. We still do have three left to do, and probably they may have to be they may be done all at the same time, or they may be chunked into smaller areas. But if for some reason the ministry were to provide us with those updated guidelines in a relatively short time span, then we would bring it back to trustees to be able to possibly look at doing an accommodation review next year. But until that point, we're pretty stuck. So the action item is to approve the schedule, which is nothing next year, with the intention that if something were to change, we would bring it back to trustees.
Thank you for presenting the report. And trustees will note that our three areas that are yet to be reviewed are the East Mountain, West Mountain, and Dundas. I'll turn to trustees now. This is an action item, so I'm randomly going to select Trustee Galindo to move the action item and get it on the floor. Are there any questions or comments from trustees? Again, I'll move through a rotating list, starting with Trustee Galindo.
Thank you, Trustee Danko. No, I think the background and the recommendation makes sense on this report. I don't have any questions, and I'm happy to move the report.
Thank you, Trustee Galindo. Next, I'll go to Trustee Johnstone.
No questions at this time.
Thank you. Trustee Tutt?
No questions. Thank you.
And Trustee Buck?
I do have a question. Just going to put off speaker while I'm talking. So with the working with the understanding that if something were to change with the ministry, staff would bring this forward to us again. Is that something I'm just a little bit concerned that trustees lose control if staff aren't bringing it on of their own volition to us. Does that make sense? Like, I would want to guarantee that that comes forward, like I would for any item that a staff member says would come to us if something were to change at the ministerial level.
Thank you, Trustee Buck. And just to give some context, when the ministry does publish their updated pupil accommodation review guidelines, we will then need to update our policy, and there will be a process that trustees will be very involved in to ensure that our process, policy and procedure aligns with the new guidelines. So it certainly will come to trustees, but I will turn to Associate Director Zucker if you can comment on where we would expect to see that first if there is an update.
Thank you, Chair Danko. So you're correct that once the ministry provides us with their guidelines, we have to review our policies to make sure that they comply with those guidelines so that it would come to the policy committee first. It would have to be vetted through the policy committee, and then if changes had to be made, it would have to be approved by the policy committee, and then at that time or during that time, we could bring it to trustees through finance and facilities to see if we want to look at changing the schedule. And I can understand your concern with regards to making sure that we bring it back. So I'm okay with an amended motion that we would bring it back if something changes. I just don't know. I guess it would happen anyways, but as far as the timing is concerned, I'm not sure what the sort of drop-dead deadline would be for a change to come in us to be able to do an accommodation review next year, given all of the work that has to happen in policy beforehand.
Thank you, Associate Director Zucker. And I think to highlight, it took us several months the last time we had updates to the guidelines to update our policy and procedure so that it aligned and so that it was a policy and procedure that we could feel comfortable with implementing. Do you have a follow-up question, Trustee Buck?
No, that was very clear. Thank you for making it so for me. I appreciate it.
Thank you. So it will be coming to trustees if there was an update. I think Associate Director Zucker has highlighted that it would be quite challenging to schedule a review for the fall or for next year, even if we did get updates, unless they were very soon. But trustees would be involved in both setting the policy and adjusting the accommodation rooms review schedule. So trustees would be involved in all steps of that. So I won't adjust the recommended action item, but I will look for a vote now. Our action item is that the board approve the 2020-21 accommodation strategy schedule, which is in Appendix A, and that is on page 3-3 and carries over to 3-6. So again, I'll do a negative vote. Is anyone opposed to this action item? Okay, hearing none, the action item passes, and we can move along to item number 4. This is our update on construction projects due to ministerial order. So there isn't a component of the report for this. However, we do have a PowerPoint slide deck that we can look at. So I'll ask trustees to bring up the PowerPoint for the 2020-21 update on construction projects, and I will turn it over to Associate Director Zucker.
Thank you, Chair Danko. And I'll give everybody a second to open it, but as you're doing that, I'll comment that the reason that we're bringing it forward now, as we talked about at the information session on Tuesday, that when the ministerial order, I guess it'll be last weekend, reduced the number of essential businesses.
Sorry, Associate Director Zucker, can I get you to pause for a moment? You're just breaking up on my end. You were just talking about the ministerial order that we got last week about essential services, correct? Maybe if you can recap that.
That's correct. And that ministerial order reduced the number of essential services in Ontario. And as part of that, non-essential construction was included. And it has taken us this past week in order to determine if school construction is considered essential or not. So there's the delay in bringing this information forward. And I moved to a different part of my house, so hopefully that's a little bit better. Okay,
yes,
so
that seems to be helping.
Sorry, you're better? Or you can hear me?
Yes.
So the ministerial order did say there is no non-essential construction. I'm just on page 2 of the slide. We did look for legal advice, both through CODE, which is the Council of Directors of Education, so all of the directors in Ontario. They asked for a legal opinion, and it was provided by Keel Cottrell, and they indicated that school construction would not be considered essential. Excuse me. And we also just confirmed that with our local council, and they also indicated the same thing. So as a result, there is a pause in school construction. So that doesn't mean that you won't see activity on those sites. The general contractors do have to secure the sites to make sure that they're safe. They also have a lot of materials and equipment that is on the site, and they want you to make sure that those are properly secured because they're quite expensive and they want to make sure that they're safeguarding their assets. So if you do or hear, about construction on the site, we have confirmed from all of our general contractors that they will be adhering to the pause, but they do have to do certain things in order to make sure that their sites are secured. So on page 3, it just highlights the new builds that were in progress. Rockton and Nora Francis Henderson were and are scheduled to open in September, so they're fairly far along in their construction process. We have Spring Valley and Greensville, who we are aggressively targeting for September, but we talked about last month that we would be likely in January, so that would be still targeting a January opening. And then we have the Glen and Memorial, Stony Creek, and again, we are looking at January/September 2021 for these. So right now, every school is still on target, but obviously as the pause lengthened. If it does, then we could have some concerns about the timing of the school opening. But for now, we're still working towards the same timing that we had before. So although we're pausing, we are far enough along in the construction processes that we do feel that the openings right now are attainable. That being said, if the pause continues for an extended period of time, then we will have to change those timelines and we'll update trustees accordingly. Slide four just talks about other renovations that are taking place. We've got some window replacements at places like Ancaster High. We've got some bench work going on, like the science labs at Glendale and Salt Lake Field. We've got some accessibility work going on. There's elevators at Ancaster High and Sir Allen McNabb. And there's just a lot of other renewal work that will have to pause so that you will not see contractors in the building. The good thing is that we were nearing the end of our benchmark work that could be done. So secondary, we were nearing the end except for Fields. And for Sherwood and for elementary, we were nearing the end except for gym expansions and schools that hadn't been through accommodation reviews. So we weren't planning on adding any additional benchmark work for 2021. So the pause, it will obviously impact the timing of when things happen, but it won't create a significant backlog because there are no projects that were being added on to these for next year. So there's a silver lining there a little bit with the work that we've been doing, excuse me. And then the last slide just refers to other maintenance. We are allowed to continue maintenance for safety reasons. So CUPE will still be going to schools and completing work orders if they meet the safety requirements. And honestly, if something's broken, for the most part, it's a safety requirement. If it's not fixed, then it could have potential impacts. So we will be continuing to go through those work orders, and CUPE will be continuing to do work in the schools where possible if it does meet the requirements of the ministerial order. So those slides were just to help follow along and to provide a little bit of an update of where we are. Obviously, things can change daily, weekly. So we do continue to get updates from the ministry through code, and we will work within those parameters. And as I said, if they start to affect the timing of school openings, then we certainly will update trustees. In the public communication that is going out tomorrow, we do talk about the ministerial order and the pause and that it could potentially impact school openings, but right now it's a could, it's not our will. So thank you, and again, happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. So again, this is a monitoring item, so I'll just open the floor up to questions or comments. So starting with Trustee Johnstone.
Yeah, I don't have, I guess, any further comments at this time. It's too bad that these projects are paused, but in light of what's happening, health and safety is always priority. So that's my only comment. No questions.
Thank you. Trustee Tutt.
Hi, thank you. My question through the chair to Associate Director Zucker is, what's the communication strategy around this in terms of notifying the various school communities that are going to be affected by this? I mean, I think it's well documented that the communities that I represent, you know, there's Rockton and Greensville, they've been waiting quite a bit for this, and I think those parents and those students and those educators are going to be extremely understanding because of the health implications that are involved here, but at the same time, they've been waiting quite a bit. So I just wonder what will be the communication strategy in terms of getting this information out to them when I know right now we are on time, but if we're to believe what's kind of in the news, and if we are in this thing for the long haul, then chances are we're not going to meet the targeted opening. So I'm just wondering how we're going to go about forming those communities. Thanks.
Thank you, Trustee Tutte, Associate Director.
Thank you, and through the chair. Like you said, right now we don't anticipate any changes to the openings other than if they were already communicated. If there were to be a change, then absolutely we would be communicating directly with the specific community to update them, and it would be through school website, through letters, and Center Voice, which has been our standard communications with anything that's been happening through this time period. So, again, right now, it's just a general communication to everyone that, yes, it is affecting construction. You will see a pause in construction, but we don't anticipate it impacting school openings, and everybody is receiving that communication. But if it does affect a specific school, we will be targeting and communicating with that community specifically.
Thank you. Do you have any follow-up questions, Trustee Tutte?
Yes, I actually have a follow-up. Now, with regards to the ministerial order and the legal opinion that was provided by our folks and the folks in code and their, you know, separate counsel, now, does the province or is the ministry aware that our interpretation of that order is that construction is non-essential? And if so, is there kind of a line of communication with the province, with the ministry direct specifically with regards to some type of understanding or possible timeline, taking into consideration that this is impacting these bills, or is it just kind of like, you know, follow what's going on in the mainstream through the premier's office, which will supersede everything else?
Thank you, Associate Director.
So thank you, Trustee, for that question. On Thursday mornings at 9 o'clock, all of the directors in Ontario have a call with the ministry, and this has been a hot topic in the last couple of weeks. And so they are aware. They provided very vague direction, and when asked for further direction, they were the ones that actually advised them seeking legal advice. So we did that. They're aware of the advice that has come back and aware of the potential implications on school construction. And so they're trying to balance, you know, the impact on construction with public safety. And so they recognize that it's a challenge and could be a challenge for boards, but at this point, they're not making any changes.
Thank you.
Any further questions, Trustee Tutte?
No, that's everything, Chair Danko. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Moving along to Trustee Buck.
Thank you. Okay, so I am a little bit concerned, and I just was kind of hoping to gauge from you, Associate Director Zucker, if we're crunching the numbers to see what, like, our absolute minimum number of days our construction and all of our other vendors will need in order to complete each of these projects. Is that something that we're already kind of getting the math down, crunching those numbers, seeing what needs to be done before we can't open any of these schools come the fall?
Thank you. Assistant Director?
I can ask Senior Manager Anderson to respond. I know that his staff has been working with each of the general contractors quite and meeting virtually quite regularly in order for everybody to assess. So I'm not sure, Dave, if you have anything further to add.
Through the chair, it's really difficult to narrow down working back, and I understand what Trustee Buck is after, but part of the challenge is going to be when the order is no longer in effect, what does that mean to deliveries and long lead items and that sort of thing, and depending on where they are in the project. Some of the sites are still receiving deliveries this week, which is great news for big items such as rooftop units and whatnot. So it really depends on how long and how much, you know, how many more weeks. Hopefully it's just days and weeks that this order is in place, and then we'll really need to rely on our contractors to tell us in terms of remobilization, what does it mean to their timelines and whatnot. So unfortunately, it's difficult at this point to reverse engineer sort of that timeline, given what we don't know.
Thank you. Any follow-up, Trustee Buck?
No, I do want to acknowledge it, that it would be, there are so many different variables at play right now about, just like you said, materials. What will we have access to in a timely manner in order to open? And it's encouraging to hear that we have those bigger items for some of the projects. So that's good to know we're ready to go once construction is able to open up again. I just would like to hear, as soon as staff has any idea around that, for it to come back to us at this committee.
Thank you, and that absolutely will happen. I can commit on staff's behalf, I think. Turning to Trustee Galindo, any questions or comments?
Yes, thank you, Trustee Danko. I just want to thank Associate Director Zuka for the presentation. I have two questions. Before I get to those, I do want to echo Trustee Tutt's comments around the communication piece and how we're going to be communicating this information to our communities. I think that's really important and essential. So that's one comment. The other comment is building off of Trustee Buck's concerns around construction timelines. My first question would be around the legal position that our board would be in the event that, because of the temporary shutdown of non-essential projects, what would happen in the event that contractors are unable to now meet their legal requirement to complete a project because of COVID for whatever reason? And like Trustee Buck said, there's a lot of factors at play. But I guess that would be one of my concerns, is in the event that a contractor is no longer able to meet the legal requirement to complete the job and they push back saying that it's because of ministerial order to stop work, what position does that put our board in legally? And I mean, it is hypothetical at this point, but it is one of my concerns, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe it's not a concern. I'm wondering if there's any comment from staff about that, and then I have another question after that.
Thank you, Trustee Galindo. And if I could just add on, legally and financially, if there are implications for delays in the projects that are due to this ministerial order or other impacts from the current situation. Associate Director?
I think from a risk management, legal and financial position, that we should probably discuss this in camera versus public.
Okay, we'll hold that question for in camera then. Thank you. The second question, Trustee Galindo?
Yes, thank you. I appreciate it. The second question is, I think, a simple one. When can we expect the next, just give me one second, the next capital projects update at a future finance and facilities meeting? I imagine that these changes will be reflected in that capital projects update.
Associate Director?
That's correct. So we would need you quarterly updates for our major capital projects, and that would be coming in May or maybe June, sorry. But we are meeting weekly right now, so if there are any significant changes or deadlines that are affected, then that is, we wouldn't wait until it's on the schedule. We would bring that information to trustees right away.
Thank you. Any further questions?
Yep, no, thank you, Associate Director Zuker, for that. I think the last or the most recent update was on the March 12th Finance and Facilities meeting. It would be nice to see if we could get an updated one at a more recent, or rather at a more, at a future meeting that's closer. If not, I understand, but I think it would be helpful to have an updated document that's reflective of the ministerial order. That is all.
Thank you, Trustee Galindo, and we can look at our I'll work with Associate Director Zucker to see where that might be able to come to trustees if a document can be updated. Okay, this is a monitoring item, so we do not have a vote. Moving along to item number 5, which is our 2020-21 budget development. Again, there is no corresponding component in the report. However, there is a PowerPoint slide deck that has been provided to help you follow along. So I'll ask trustees to open the PowerPoint and turn it over to Associate Director Zucker or Senior Manager Dawson.
Thanks, Chair Danko. I will start and then I will turn it over to Denise Dawson to go through the presentation. But I'll just update us on our timelines, which is slide 2. So just a recap of where we are and then where we're going to be. So we did approve the budget assumptions in February. We approved the budget priorities in March. We approved school-based staffing last week, and it will be going to board next week, so it will get final approval there. And again, that was at the point in time, and once we get the GSN and PPF, we'll be able to relook at that staffing and our collective agreements. We did hear today on the call from the ministry and through code that they don't expect to have the GSN to us in April, so that they're targeting early May, which is later than we've ever received it. At this point, they have not changed the deadline of when the budget is due to the ministry, which is June 30th, but they do recognize that the later that they get the information to us, the harder it will be to meet that deadline. That being said, they did talk about possibly providing a planning document to give us a little taste of what the GSN is going to be, but they did say to expect a pretty similar GSN with no significant changes to prior year. So that's the plan that that's the assumption that we have been using anyway. So we should see little impact once we get the GSN between the calculations that Denise and her team have done and what the actuals come back as once we get the GSN. So we have been working, again, with those assumptions. We've done the calculations. We've worked with exec council, and we do talk about it almost weekly and make recommendations. They make recommendations to come forward to this committee. And we would present the final budget. Usually we present it in May. I'm going to think that it will probably be in June. And then, again, right now the ministry due date is still June 30th. And last year they extended it by a month, but we were still able to meet the June 30th deadline. So with all things being the same, we would expect to meet that deadline again this year. So with that sort of highlight and high-level overview of where we are in the process, I'll turn it over to Denise to go through the remainder of the presentation.
Okay, thank you, Stacey. Through the chair, if you want to look at slide three, what we're doing tonight is just going through the decisions that were made and approved last week and some financial rationale for some of the staffing decisions that were made and a little bit more details of what those staffing high-level data that you approved last week. And then at the end, we will present where we are currently with all of these recommendations built into the budget. So again, on slide 3, we're just looking at the school-based staffing as we approved last week. And we have an increase of 44.7 FTE to the board, primarily in elementary teachers for next year. Again, briefly, we outlined 6 main reasons for staffing changes. The investment in system priorities as collective agreements are ratified, which was the former local priorities that they're reinventing under another name. We have uncertainty regarding PPF funding, that is our additional grants that are provided outside of the GSN for specific purposes, such as the MAS strategy. We have school closures and openings, class size funding, changes in enrollment and other budget adjustments. So just briefly, the investment and system priorities are only union that has ratified that both centrally and locally is CUPE, and as a result, we have an additional 9.0 FTE positions being added to the budget worth approximately $570,000. 8 of them are built into your school-based staffing, which are an increase in school caretaking staff, and that would be 4 positions for what they call a 10 to 6 shift. And then there are some 4 additional positions that are top up of existing FTEs in some schools where there's need. So if there was a 0.5, they may now have a 0.75 assistant caretaker assisting in the evening. In addition, out of those total of 9 positions that were funded for this year, we also have an additional maintenance staff position. So in total, 9. Again, we have seen highlights of the ETFO agreement, and we do know local priorities is built into that collective agreement, and that will be built into the budget hopefully by the next time we're presenting it, and details on how that staff will be utilized will be provided. The second thing is we talked about last week is uncertainty regarding PPF funding. So the addition here is that currently in 2019-20, we have 25.5 positions that are funded through PPF, which are the Partnership and Priority Funding, the former EPO grant. And they have a total salary and benefit cost of $2.5 million. So for the majority of the positions, these have not been included into the budget. There are some positions that were deemed necessary for programming, and we have built them into the 2020-21 budget without the corresponding PPF revenue funding. So what that means is they're being funded by the board operations, and I can provide a little bit more detail on a position-by-position basis when we go in camera, because there's salaries attached to each position. But in total, there's 25.5 positions currently, and the majority of them will be declared surplus based on the various collective agreement timelines, unless we receive information sooner than later with respect to this funding. School closures and openings. I just wanted to summarize it because we kind of didn't have, we had it in a variety of different places. But in total, if you look at the next slide that has the, they don't have any numbers on them. That's good. So for school closures and openings, we had a reduction of 1 elementary vice principal. And that is really with the combining of the Rockton 2 campuses into 1. Currently, that dual campus school has a principal and a vice principal. So when we started the budget presentation, we reduced the vice principal at one of the facilities and assumed that there would be only 1 administrator at the new Rockton school. For elementary office administration, as a result of the increased size of our new build, we are expecting an additional 1.0 FTE being needed at those schools. And again, with respect to caretaking staff, since staff based on square footage, again, due to the size of those buildings, we're expecting an additional 1.0 FTE. So in total, not much of an adjustment, but 1 FTE in total increase due to school closures. The next slide is about enrollment projections, and what I want to highlight here is when we came in February with the key parameters and assumptions to guide the budget, when you look at secondary, at that time we were projecting a 311 FTE increase in secondary students. At this point in time, we are only projecting 67 of those students. So at that point, we had yet to send our board projections out to the schools. So two things happened. We sent our board projections to the schools. They reviewed the option sheets in hand and reduced the projections accordingly. In addition, based on information from the Welcome Center on International Students, we reduced our enrollment projections by 80 ADE for international students, as those students were expected to come into the country for next year, and we at this point are not sure whether we will have those students. So as a result, we are only at an increase of 67 FTE between the current last year's budget and the current year. So when you turn to the next slide, as a result of this increase, so the 811 elementary increase, which is a budget-to-budget increase, we are expecting an increase of 50.5 teachers between last year's budget and this year's budget. Please remember, when we brought stuff forward to you in October, almost half of that increase was experienced in September. So half of those teachers are already hired. So in September, we had to hire 25 teachers due to the increase between budget and September for reorganization. So really, between revised budget and budget, a projected budget, we're only going up another 25 teachers, but on the books, budget to budget, it's 50.5 FTE. Similarly, you'll see an increase in enrollment of 174 full-day kindergarten students, which requires an additional 4 early childhood educators. The 67.25 secondary teachers, secondary enrollment increase generates an approximately 4.8 FTE when you factor in the change in class size from 22.6, which is where we were at last year, to 23. I can pause at this point for any questions or continue on.
Thank you. I'll have you continue on, please.
Okay, good. In the next slide on other budget adjustments, last week we talked about staffing adjustments from specialized services to reflect the changes in enrollment between panels and to meet the needs of students. So you will receive the entire detail of some of the adjustments made by specialized services. But to date, what you have seen is a reduction in elementary special classes. So those are self-contained classes for special education students. So it's a reduction of 8 classes plus their prep time, which is a reduction of 9.6 FTE. We have added an additional 3 special classes to the secondary panel plus prep time, which gives us an additional 4 FTE. And then we reduced educational assistance but added child and youth care practitioners for an increase of 0.5. But again, there is additional information that will be coming forward as we present the non-school-based staffing in future meetings. We also talked last week about staffing adjustments to align with expenditures so basically we like to match the revenue to the expenditures for schools such as school foundation grants. And I'm going to provide a little bit of financial background to justify the decisions that were recommended last week and approved. And then the final other adjustments were the reductions in the contingencies of 4 that were in elementary in the current year and 11 in secondary. So if you look at the next slide, we're looking at the school foundation grant for principals and vice principals. So how the school foundation, provides for two things. It provides funding for principals and vice principals, funding for school office staff, and funding for school office supplies, not school budget. So the ministry funds us based on the number of schools that we have and the enrollment in each school. So for an elementary school, you receive funding for one principal and one elementary office administrator, provided you have enrollment greater than 150 students in that school. So that's the majority of our schools. In addition, you receive additional funding for vice principals and school office staff based on enrollment. So, for example, if you had an enrollment of 300 students in an elementary school, you would receive one principal, possibly 0.75 of a vice principal, and 1.35 of an elementary office administrator. So when you take all of those together, you can take a look and see under the ministry funding column that we're being funded for 172.5 positions. The funding is based on the actual dollars that they attach to each one of these positions is based on the provincial average salary and benefits for each position. So in total, the ministry would be funding us for $22,950,000 for elementary and secondary principals and vice principals. When you take a look at our board allocation, you can see that we're at 159 positions that are allocated to the elementary and secondary schools. And the total value of that is $22,810,000. So that is based on our board average salary and benefits. So in the cases where the board average for a principal is greater than the ministry average, it means that you can't afford as many principals and vice principals as the ministry is funding us for. In addition, things such as where I call it temporary assistance, which is really sick leave coverage, the ministry, through their funding, intends that all of that needs to be covered within this envelope. And additionally, there's consumables that are related specifically to principals and vice principals, such as cell phones and other consumables that need to come out of this entire funding envelope. But at the end of the day, when we started the budget and had reduced for the one vice principal due to school closure, we had a surplus of unused funds of approximately $138,000. That then led to a recommendation by Executive Council that we brought forward last week for an additional 1.0 elementary VP to align our expenditures to our revenue. So technically, we spent the $138,000 by adding the additional 1.0 vice principal to this year's budget through last week's discussion. Similarly, for office administrators, when you take a look at it the same way, again, as I explained, the funding from the ministry is based on the number of schools and enrollment per school. The ministry would be funding us for approximately 215 staff, valued at approximately $13 million. Our current staffing complement with the one additional staff added for school openings and closures would have been 200 FTE, valued at $13.2 million. And then again, we have to pay for supply coverage out of that envelope. And the consumables are primarily the school office budgets. And as a result, we were in a deficit in this envelope of approximately $263,000, which led us at Exec Council and then through last week's discussions to reduce the number of elementary office assistants to align with the revenue grant, which was 4.5 FTE. So with that reduction of 4.5 FTE, this envelope will be balanced and the revenue will equal the expenditure. So finally, when we get to the preliminary budget, we have used the projection, the projected enrollment that I have shown you. Our best calculations with regards to calculating the grants for student needs, and we've included all staffing adjustments to date as a result of enrollment, class size changes, school opening and closure, PPF adjustments, investment and system priorities for CUPE, and the budget adjustments we've talked about. At the end of the day, when you take all of your revenues and all of your expenditures, at this point in time, our preliminary budget is showing us a surplus of just under $500,000 or about $450,000. So our next step is to receive the funding formula. I thought it was at the end of April. Stacy just let me know it was at the beginning of May, so we need to adjust this slide. Once we get the grant, we'll revise the preliminary budget position and then continue to review expenditures and staffing with exec council and bring them forward to finance and facilities for possible additions and reductions. With that, that's the end of the presentation. If you have any questions, I'd be pleased to answer.
Thank you, and thank you to you both for the detailed presentation. I just wanted to thank you, Denise, for clarifying the budget-to-budget numbers versus our current staffing complement or revised budget numbers and any additions we might be making. I think that's an important point. And thanks for clarifying that we are expecting to wait until the beginning of May to receive our funding formula. At this point, I will turn to trustees for questions or comments. This is a monitoring item and no mover is required. I will start with Trustee Tutt.
No questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Trustee Buck?
No questions.
Trustee Galindo?
Thank you, Trustee Danko. That was a very juicy presentation, a lot of information, and I appreciate all that information. I do have one question with regards to staffing for secondary teachers. So I guess it's two questions on that note. Number one, as of this point, does it look like we might be generating a list of redundancies? And if we are generating a list of redundancies, assuming we will get more information, of course, in the budget process over the next couple of weeks, when will that list go out to staff? Trying to remember around the time period of when it went out last year. I'm trying to remind myself of what that might look like this year.
Thank you, Associate Director Zucker. If you can maybe just talk about our typical process and timing for redundancies being posted.
Thank you, and through the chair. So the timing for all collective agreements are different. Elementary would have been last week, and secondary is before the end of this month. So in the cases where there are positions being declared redundant, and again, some of them may be as a result of PPF funding not being confirmed, then the position, the person would be made aware according to the staffing timelines, and then we would look at placing those people into positions through the regular timelines, and that would be later next month. So, again, there's a bit of a process. It would be the same process that we follow every year because we haven't changed any of our timelines, and it's expected by all staff because everybody knows the timelines that they're working with.
Thank you. Your second question, Trustee Galindo?
No, those were all my questions, but just to follow up to that, just for clarification, for secondary teachers, is that the end of this month or the end of next month that we should know when those notices would be going out?
Associate Director?
Thank you. I'm going to ask Denise to confirm the exact date because she'll know it off the top of her head, and I will have to pull it up. But it is
April. I believe it's April 30th.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further follow-up?
get just one more follow-up, and I apologize. I feel like I'm on the verge of asking in-camera questions, but as of right now, do we know if there's going to be redundancies announced at the end of the month for secondary teachers?
Associate Director?
Thank you, and through the chair, if you look at the school-based staffing, you'll see that there is a reduction of 2.16 positions. So that would mean right now that there would be surplus positions in secondary. And again, depending on the funding source, there could be some that were more that we're having to take away, and then we're adding in certain cases. So, for example, if there wasn't PPF funding for a position, then we would have to take that away. But if there's an increased enrollment, then we would have to add. So that 2.16 is a net, but that would be the expectation right now. If nothing else changed, if the grants didn't change, if we didn't hear anything, other information, then we would be declaring 2.16 FTE surplus at the end of April.
Thank you. Anything else, Trustee Galindo?
No, I was looking at that slide and I was misreading it, so I appreciate the clarification on that with regards to the 2.16 decrease. I guess just a note of reflection, I mean, it's very different than where we were at last year, where we had to announce several redundancies and it was a big deal at our board. It looks like we won't be doing that this year, and I'm happy to see that that's the case.
Yes.
Yeah, and
thank
I just
you.
Want to also clarify that that is, again, this is worst-case scenario conservative, so we would only be adding after that fact.
Amazing. Thanks so much for the clarification.
Thank you. And that is the benefit of having increases in enrollment for, I think, the first time in both elementary and secondary. Moving along to Trustee Johnstone, any questions or comments?
I'm good, thank you.
Thank you, and I did have one question. When we talk about the School Foundation grant, you mentioned that includes consumables. So if I was looking at office administration, for example, can you just clarify, maybe give me some examples of what the consumables would include?
Through the chair, the consumables include approximately $400,000 for school office supplies. So that would be the dollars that are allocated to the office to run the office for paper, printer cartridges, various other things. In addition, there is charges for internet and fiber wire, which the ministry requires us to allocate to each funding category based on the number of devices. So those are the two largest in the consumable line. With the principal line, like I mentioned before, again, it would be internet and fiber wire, cell phones, and a few other miscellaneous expenditures. We also allocate a little bit of funding there for upgrades to technology as a principal, vice principal, or office staff perhaps requires a new device, then money is allocated for that accordingly.
Thank you for that clarification. Okay, as that was not an action item, there is no vote required, and that brings us to item 6, which is resolution into Committee of the Whole private session for the Education Act, Section 207.2B. At this time, we will be adjourning public session and we will not be returning to public session. So I will assign, let's see, Trustee Tutt will move us to go into private session. Is anyone opposed? Okay, hearing no one, I want to thank everyone for joining us as we close our public session. Thank you to staff for the comprehensive reports and to trustees for your questions. I'm going to invite trustees and staff to hang up from this call. We will take a short break for 5 minutes and rejoin for the private session. You'll call back into the same number at 6:05. And as I mentioned, we will not rise from the private session back.